Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that somehow over the weekend acquired the rights to Logan Stankoven for about 15 minutes before he was loaned back to the Dallas Stars. I'm not really sure how it all works. Mark, let's do a little stargazing.
Let's do it.
That was imperative this weekend.
I have cloud cover, so I can't stargaze at all.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. It'll be a short one. Of course, it won't actually be. We do actually have things to talk about. Of course, the biggest news is Dallas finally pulled the trigger on a trade. We've got some important games that we spent a month hyping that happened. Some fallout. There was a call up of some note, I would say. So there's a few things for us to talk about, most of which stems from the fallout of a big trade, but we're going to dive into it. Mark, before we get into the nitty and the gritty of it all, what got your fan motor running this week more? The news that Chris Tanev will be joining the Dallas Stars or the debut of Logan Stankoven as a roster regular?
Stankoven, not even close. Not even close. That one pays off long term. He's just demonstrated that he's ready for this. He's not going to let the moment overpower him. That motor just runs and runs and runs and runs, and he'll fit in anywhere on this line on this team for the next 10 years.
I mean, how good does he look next to Wyatt Johnson? Right.
Isn't like that fun?
That pair. Honestly, and this is something as a very old rec league hockey player, there's a time in like the late spring, early summer when all of the high school kids, right, their seasons have wrapped up, the competitive thing is over, and they're kind of transitioning into the beer league life, right? And there's about a month where they just try too hard, you know, before all of us old fogies can kind of calm them down. And watching Johnston and Stankoven on a line together reminds me of watching those two a-hole high school kids that joined the rec league team that just don't understand that everybody else has to go to work the next day and just take it easy, guys. Just take it easy.
I don't know. It rejuvenates Jamie Benn, don't you think?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, you want to be playing with those guys when they're on your team. It's fantastic. I mean, when you're playing it feels like it must be very frustrating to have to carry the puck with, you know, and we'd already seen it over the course of the season. Like Johnston has a motor of his own, and there've already been a couple of high profile goals and chances that he's created through tenacity and backchecking and forechecking. Like he gets on it. And then, you know, I think he's played half a dozen games in the NHL, and I think the chase a defender down from behind stick lift puck jack is Logan Stankoven's like first signature play in the NHL.
Just a couple of games in too. And you know what's fun with Stankoven? You hear all this stuff. Oh, he's too small to play. He's this little fire plug. And at a certain point when you're 5'7" and you go to the boards, you get that extra leverage because you're just underneath everything. And he utilizes his frame and the ability to get in tight areas so well that he's an incredible board battler.
I think I'm glad you put it that way as well, right? Because you also, you know, when you're that size, right, the durability thing always comes up. He's not like trying to go shoulder to shoulder and blow and get, like, to your point, he's using his leverage. He is very physical, but he's physical in a way that isn't going to taper. Right. Like, he's physical in a way that should be sustainable because, like you said, it's leverage stuff. It's getting a lower body point, contact point. It's working the wall. Like, he's playing in a way that, frankly, should be pretty predictable. Right. I mean, obviously, we're going to get super crazy based on an incredibly small sample size. But I think that the way that he's playing, and I was somebody that really thought about, like, oh, wow, is this kid's going to have to adjust at his size and prove some things. Like, I am almost immediately was a convert and thought that I was probably overthinking the size thing and he's going to be fine.
Yeah. And, you know, I really didn't see him play at Kamloops a whole lot, but you take a look at what he's doing in the NHL and it's exactly the same way that he was playing in the AHL. So there's no reason why this isn't convertible.
Exactly. He has definitely been a number one source of excitement over the first couple of games. And Mark, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all of your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use the code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here.
I believe that Logan Stankoven is going to stick around for a while.
Well, you know, you say that, Mark, but he didn't. He's been sent down like three times. I think he's been since this podcast started.
He probably has been, but you know what? I don't think his car's getting a whole lot of mileage on it.
It is, and we'll peel the curtain back. Mark and I are obviously professional capologists here, professional podcasters. We know what's up. Mark, it's clearly because he has not yet won the trust of the coaching staff, right? And they're trying to send a message.
Well, you know, they can send Stankoven down, but they can't send Lundqvist down. So I think maybe they're sending the message through Stankoven to Lundqvist.
We're going to get to Lenny here in a minute. What they're actually doing, as far as, you know, obviously we're not mustachioed maestro Jim Nill, and we'll get to him in a minute. But really what they're doing is it's a cap space thing, right? And every time he leaves the roster, so does his cap hit, which is something like, what, $800K at the NHL level? I forget what exactly.
Yeah, a little over $4,000 a day is what the daily cap hit is. So yeah.
Which seems like a negligible amount, but like it prorates this time of year. And all of this leads me to my theory is, Mark, you do this, I think, and I'm going to give you credit for the other one, but my first thought was you are this meticulous because A, you're fantastic at your job, but B, you're this meticulous because you have more moves planned. And when you look at the way that, you know, of course, cap space prorates and at the end of the year, it doesn't matter. Thank you, Tampa Bay and Chicago for that matter. They did it too. But that sort of diligence and being able to sneak a couple of days where Stankoven wasn't on the roster, even though he was on the roster, can make the difference between being able to secure an additional asset and not, right? So even though he's not going anywhere, I believe he's, according to KT, he's actually living with the Pavelskis, which seems like a good thing for the Stars to do. But it's a way for them to make sure that they're leaving options open and kind of gaining additional cap space, bizarrely, that they can use on something else, potentially, you know, more help.
Yeah, it's one of these weird situations that the Stars are in where they are utilizing long-term injured reserve, but there are special situations where if you're under the cap, you can still accumulate some dollars. And so I believe, and I haven't sat down and done the math, but I believe that if you look at it, taking Stankoven off the roster actually drops them to a point where they can accumulate some dollars. That's fun. Let's move on to the big news.
The big news, I guess, is on the subject of Jim Neal being a genius. The Dallas Stars, over the course of the last week, finally pulled the trigger and acquired Chris Tanev from the Calgary Flames.
And I think they're holding him out right now because they're worried that that he might block a shot on the way to his first game and hurt himself. So it's all preservation.
Self-preservation. I what I have actually heard is that it is visa issues and they're just waiting to get it was either the pregame show or like Razor and Josh, once the game started against San Jose, they were talking about how it's just some immigration stuff because he's of course been working in Canada for Calgary and now he's not. So from what I've gathered, the reason that he has yet to make his debut, first the Winnipeg game kind of came too soon, and then the reason he was out versus San Jose is they're still trying to finalize like working permits and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, all that government stuff. You know, it's Canadian and U.S., so who knows what's going on. The U.S. is tapping things down on the border. Who knows? Canada may not be recognizing Alberta as a real province anymore. It's very complicated.
It's way above our pay grade. I think the thing that I want to focus on, Mark, is first the specifics, right? He's traded to Calgary. What Dallas actually gave away is they gave Artem Grushnikov, former second-round pick, and a 2024 second-round pick. Plus, if Dallas makes the Stanley Cup final, they will hand over a third-round pick in 2026. Dallas also got rid of their fourth-round pick in 2026. They sent that to New Jersey because Calgary retained half of Tanev's remaining salary, and then New Jersey retained half of that. So Dallas got about a 75% price break. They're getting Tanev for about, I think it's a cap hit of like $1.1 million, $1.12 million, something like that. AKA, Mark, tell me why this isn't just Jim Neal absolutely fleecing the Calgary Flames, the New Jersey Devils, the league in general. How on earth did he manage to get the premier player at a position of excruciating need without giving up a first-round draft pick or an asset of note?
I think that maybe there's some magic to mustache twirls. and you can do that if you twirl them just right. It has a bit of a hypnotic effect. Calgary wanted a first, and Dallas was going to struggle with bringing in that kind of salary. So you knew they had to get it bought down. And here, you know, for very limited, Grushnikov's kind of fallen off. But apparently Calgary values players like Grushnikov a bit more than Dallas does. Dallas has gone to more of a, you know, at least a combo or puck mover type defender, and Grushnikov's much more of a stay at home guy.
He profiles like kind of classic, yeah, like simple meat and potatoes, you know, kind of lunch pail mold.
Yeah. And I mean, he kind of fits right in. After the trade, I watched the first Calgary Wranglers Colorado Eagles game and Grushnikov played, and he just fits right into what they're doing. Couple errors that you saw him make that you would have expected coming out of Texas, but yeah, he's a perfect Calgary guy.
Yeah, that was not me by any means taking a flamethrower to Grushnikov for his value or anything. Really, what stunned me about it, right, is this need has been known since the offseason, right? They need the defensive help. So from the start, if you're Jim Neal, you're working from a little bit of a disadvantage because you can't really play the game that's like, ah, well, we don't really need this guy. So if you're not going to cut me a good deal, I'm going to go somewhere else, right? Like Tanev was the premier player, and there's a pretty big gap beneath him when you think about a guy that can kind of play sound defensively and help in the transition. Like he was the elite piece that does the thing Dallas needs. Then of course,
and he's on the right side too.
And he's on the right side, right? Even better. And then of course, on top of that, Hakanpää gets hurt. On top of that, Lundqvist gets hurt. So you're the Dallas Stars, and you desperately need kind of one specific thing. And there's one guy on the market that is really good at the one specific thing that you need. And then you get hurt, and you need that thing even more. And then you have a really rough stretch of hockey where you lose to Boston, you lose to New York, you lose to Ottawa, you play great against Carolina, you lose to the Islanders, you lose to Colorado, get smoked by Colorado. So it's, you have this like stretch of play that is basically, hey, remember when we said that Dallas has a big problem? Here is that problem manifesting. And despite all of that going on, and you talked about Yegorovskoy fits in and maybe Calgary values him more than the Stars do. But even with all of that said, this is not exactly a guy that is in, you know, kind of surefire territory, right? He's well-regarded, second round pick, but despite like despite all of the things on the side of the ledger that suggest Dallas is going to have to pay a premium to get the thing that they need, I would argue that I don't think it's arguable Dallas did not pay a premium for Chris Tanev.
Right. And you take a look at some of the reports about the other teams that were interested in him, and there are a lot of teams there that are willing to spend and invest in a player like Tanev. And so Jim Neal getting that deal done early is in my mind somewhat shocking. I mean, it's just incredible. I don't think anybody thought that Dallas was going to get that deal done as soon as they got done with the price that they paid.
I mean, and the price is that, like, I was in the camp. I thought that it was going to be Tanev. I never really wavered in that thought. I thought it was going to be a first. And I thought, in my mind, after the February that the Stars had, I was just waiting for the ticker to come across. And I thought in my mind that was going to finally be the thing that made Neal say, fine, if it's got to be a first, it's got to be a first. I have an opportunity here. I got to fix this. And I would have been fine. I would have been fine with a first, but just by the way, right? I think that would have been great, but it wasn't. And I think that that's fantastic. And yeah, you know, second round picks can turn out, if, you know, Grishnikov could be an NHL mainstay, and Tanev is in, you know, the final year of his contract. So it's very possible that this playoff run is the only time we'll ever really see him in a Stars sweater. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, there's a lot of ways that this could not be the panacea we're all talking about, but you can't really judge a trade in the moment based on, all you can do is look at like the circumstances at the time the deal was done. And the TLDR of this trade is Dallas got exactly the best player that profiles to the thing that they need for a price that is not going to cause any harm or damage to the franchise in the long term if it doesn't work out. Like if it works out, you know, I think that there's a, if they have to give up that third round pick because they made the final,
then you're happy. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That just works. And the thing is, he's by all reports, a good locker room guy. I think he'll fit in, which means that I would expect that Neal has a plan for how he's going to sign him to a somewhat reasonable deal. And then all of a sudden you're talking about a Dallas Stars team for the next 2 or 3 years that has their top two pairs kind of fixed.
Yeah.
And that is something that this team has been struggling with. And knowing Jim Neal, he's not going to overpay for that. He's going to rely on a character guy wanting to make it to the Stanley Cup final, maybe lift a cup in the last couple of years that he has available to do that.
And for lack of a, you know, we've, as much as we bemoan sometimes as fans the way that this team works with its veterans, I think this is also, and sometimes it works out great, sometimes it doesn't, but look at the way that Jim Neal has treated his veterans, right? Look at, you know, Pavelski didn't settle in immediately. You know, Ryan Suter certainly had his issues, you know, Hakanpaa's been hurt, but generally speaking, right, Jim Neal and the Dallas Stars have given, you know, vets some time. And it's paid off in a lot of cases, right? So I think you're right. It gives them a guy that should help them immediately. And it also, if he doesn't, if he wants too much, there's no long-term commitment here, right? Like if it's just not a fit, or if he wants, as a 34-year-old defenseman, if he wants 4 years, right? There are lots of things Dallas can do that make this really an only upside deal. And you just love to see it as a Stars fan.
Well, and the thing I appreciate so much about Neal is the way that he's layered this team. So we aren't talking about a one-year window here.
No.
What we're talking about is you know, you have the guys who are in their 30s who were part of a group of successful hockey players, and they're being followed up by a slew of guys in their mid to upper 20s who continue to keep that window open. And then you look at what's out there with prospects and guys who are just starting to get their first looks at the NHL, and that's a third window. And so by coming to Dallas, you're in a group where, unless something drastic happens, this is a 10-year window. And if you have a 10-year window, just the roll of the dice means you're going to win a cup.
Well, and the other thing as well is from a production standpoint, if you're just for, you know, just throwing a name out there, like if you are a veteran player and Dallas can dangle the carrot, you know, maybe you're a little bit past your prime, you've lost half a step, you know, you're not the guy that you were in your prime. All of a sudden you're Dallas and you say, yeah, we're looking for a guy that can play with Jason Robertson and Ropehans, right? Or, hey, we really need somebody to round out the Johnston, the Johnston Stankoven line, right? Like there are some guys on this, the age breakout you talk about, like this is like career extending. We saw it this year with the acquisition of Matt Duchene and the impact that he and Tyler Seguin had on one another and then on Mason Marchment, right? And so when you're in the market now, as Jim Nill, right, you have these opportunities to pitch players in a way of like you're bringing them into a competitive environment and you're bringing them into an environment that is likely going to help kind of emphasize what they're good at versus what, you know, just for the sake of example, like Chris Tanev's going to play with Thomas Harley or Miro Heiskanen, right? Or he may play with Esa Lindell as well. But my point being that they're going to ask Chris Tanev to come in and be the 34-year-old version of himself and to ask him to do the things that he still does well as the 34-year-old version of himself. And if they want him to do more, he's going to get to play with a, you know, bona fide in his prime capital S stud, right? And if you're a veteran, right, like that's appealing because you're going to look better on that pairing.
Yeah. And a guy like in Tanev's situation doesn't necessarily want to be the number one guy because he's figuring out if he's the number one guy, that means that five guys are behind him and that team's not necessarily good enough on the back end to compete.
Just
if he's
just
put in a place
example,
where he's
right. Like look at Jason, look at Dumba's experience in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of went the other direction. There are certainly teams that a veteran player can go to and be a first pairing, you know, first power play, be a guy. Right. But that's a different experience.
Yeah. I mean, you can say the same thing about Carlson, too.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, great, great player, unless he has to be the number one. You know, the kind of the exception that breaks the rules is maybe is Burns down in Carolina, who appears to be ageless. But
yeah, but it's only they've even that is a lot to do with how they employ him and the team. Around. Yeah. There's a lot of they do a lot to, you know, but like I said, the other example is on the Dallas Stars, right? Like we've seen it with Jamie Benn. Right. They find a slightly different role for a guy and all of a sudden you're turning the clock back 10 years, you know, and then you throw on top of that, like not only are you going to get a boost, but we're going to watch this team. And like you said, like this is a competitive window right now. So it's one of those success breeds success, even in a cap league. Like this is a team that can look at it and say, like you said, it's not like next year, a bunch of extensions kick in and this team is locked in, right? Like the cap friendly pages. Yeah. You're starting to see a couple red arrows, but it's it's Hintz and it's Heiskanen, but they've got two more years under Robertson's deal, two more years with Marchment. They've got, but by the time those extensions are coming due, right? Like Jamie Benn isn't going to make $9.5 million in his next contract. Tyler Seguin expires in 2027. So it's the consistent Jim Nill thing, right? Like every time they need money, somebody's coming off the books. And yeah, if they make some mistakes, that's not, you know, you have to spend well for that to work out. But like, he kind of has it's been a while since this team made a really big mistake with its salary cap structure.
It's been forever. And that's how you keep the continual window moving. And, you know, this is the environment Nill grew up in with Detroit.
Yeah.
Where you just kind of reload and reload and reload and you make the playoffs for 17 straight years and it really doesn't fall off until you're gone.
Yeah.
And you know, I haven't looked enough at Detroit to say, hey, this is why it kind of ultimately fell apart. But the goal here is to just keep layering and layering and layering. And the only way you're going to mess it up is if you don't keep enough assets around so that you can continue to get number one draft choices to fill that next slot.
And I think that's the secret, right? Is eventually, you know, part of why this works is because you have the, you know, you have even going all the way back, right? Part of the reason this works is because you have a GM that's aggressive and goes out and gets Tyler Seguin during a period of time when, you know, either fairly or unfairly, some off-ice stuff was impacting his on-ice values, right? And you take a chance on a guy like that, and hard to argue too much with that decision, by the way. You also have a team that's able to identify the likes of Jamie Benn in the late rounds. You know, you have a team that, like, looking down the list, right? Like, Jamie Benn was a draft pick, hence draft pick. Jason Robertson was a draft pick, right? Radek Foxa, we can bicker about how much he makes and his role.
Number one draft pick.
Right, but he's still playing, right? And yeah, you, in a perfect world, he's the number one center and scoring 200 million points a year. But, like, at some point, you get to the point where if you can consistently draft guys, Ty Dellandrea, Wyatt Johnston, you know, Miro Heiskanen, Esa Lindell, you know, Thomas Harley, right? Jake Ottinger. Like, if you can consistently, Logan Stankoven most recently, like, if you can keep that many of your roster slots filled with guys you found, it makes it much easier to just drop in the occasional Joe Pavelski, Mason Marchment, Matt Duchene, Craig Smith, right? It makes it easier for you to make those kind of plays, because if you screw, let's just for the sake of example, right? If Pavelski never rebounds in that, you know, cup run, in the bubble cup, and then has that kind of renaissance with that line, right? If he never rebounds, it was a 3-year deal. Right. Like, they probably agree to something to ship him off or buy him out with the Seattle expansion draft, and it doesn't kill the franchise. Like, yeah, they're obviously better because he still scores 20 goals a season as a, you know, 39-year-old. But, like, because of the way that deal was structured, if it had never fixed itself, the team would have been fine.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the whole thing. And that's one of the reasons why I wasn't just completely on board with the, you know, Tanev pickup and say, yeah, the cost is going to be a first, because I don't think Jim Neal thinks the cost is going to be a first. What he's saying is that's going to, it needs to be so big of a deal that it's worth it for me to partially close my next window. And the thing is, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time. The math on this is, you know, you're moving the window, but you're moving the window. Even if you pick up the perfect player for you, you're maybe moving the window from a 15% chance to a 25% chance of winning a Stanley Cup. So, yeah, you're moving the needle, but it's no guarantee. It's the same thing that says President's Trophy winning team doesn't necessarily win the Cup. In fact, they've
rarely do,
a,
right?
Yeah, they win it a bit more than everybody else, but not appreciably so. And so this whole thing, I'm going to go all in, and because I need to, I have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. You aren't making that big a difference. What we're doing here with the Dallas Stars is we're saying we've identified a weakness, and that weakness is that we don't have a second pair defender who can move the puck. And we have identified a guy, and we can bring him in for a cost that we can afford that doesn't you know, over mortgage the future. And that's the brilliance of what Jim Neal's done here.
And I think you're right. It's that's why keeping around. So just to put a little context on it, right? As of, and I'm looking at this, thank you, The Athletic does a lot of really cool stuff. So as of March 3rd, when you look at the percentage chance of winning the Stanley Cup, Dallas is tied with the best odds in the entire league to win the Stanley Cup, right? At 16%. It's Dallas and Edmonton both have 16%. Then it's Carolina at 15, Florida at 13%, right? So to your point, right, getting Chris Tanev probably added a percentage point or two. Right. In the grand scheme of things.
But we're still talking about, you know, if everything falls right, we're still talking at this point in the season, you know, 1 out of 6 chance.
Which is, and I quibble a little bit. Right. And you know, I'm not, ultimately the model is the model, right. And it's probably.
But this is, yeah, but I mean, look at this. This is the odds of rolling a 1. Okay. The theory here is that you don't put it all in on the chance that you're going to roll a 1 this year. What you do is you set up the team so that you get to roll the dice every year, and one of those times the 1's going to come up.
I do agree with you. I do not disagree with you. I think the one thing that perspective underrepresents is, I think that sometimes when your weakness is so glaring, that I think that it moved the percentage more than it moved the percentage, because it creates a situation where you're one bad play away from having to put the likes of Alex Petrovich into a critical slot, right? It's the difference between, you know, Ryan Suter having to play on your first pairing against a Stanley Cup finalist, right? Like I think that it is a little bit more impactful in ways that don't necessarily manifest because of the severity of the weakness on the Dallas Stars. Like a team, it's a kind of a team specific, situation specific bump is what I would say.
Well, and there's some Stars history here, because how long did people complain that the Stars were a goaltender away from being a legitimate Cup contender? And did it get fixed? No, it didn't get fixed. And you tried to roll the dice without really fixing the problem. And yeah, that's probably a valid perspective. But here we're then talking about a team that got bounced in the playoffs last year because of this specific glaring weakness.
Yep.
And so, do you risk again saying we like where we're at when you got bounced for that specific weakness if you have the opportunity to potentially fix it?
Exactly.
And I think the obvious answer is no, you make that move.
Right. And what I was saying is I think that even though from a like numbers percentage standpoint, you're probably looking at a 1-2% jump, I think that in practice, in the playoffs, I'm a firm believer of in the playoffs, when you can chase specific matchups and game plan to specific teams, weaknesses like the Dallas Stars play, like that's how you wind up in a series like the one they lost against the Golden Knights, where the teams were overall very evenly matched, but they also weren't, because there was a thing that Vegas could consistently attack in a way that Dallas could not defend. That doesn't necessarily get captured over the course of the regular season, because over the course of the regular season, you can't do that. Pulling up the schedule, right? On March 8th, the Anaheim Ducks, right? They're not going to have the opportunity to put together a, you know, tailored and specific in-depth executable game plan to take advantage of Jani Hakanpää in a way that they would if the teams were gearing up for a best of seven series.
Yeah, it's exactly correct. And it's kind of the luck of the draw that you know, here are the teams that you play. One of the things I think that should be appreciated about last year's Dallas Stars team was how they made it through the first two rounds, where they played two entirely different style of team, yep, and still came out of it with some pretty solid victories. But then they ran into a Vegas team where you're correct. There was a matchup that Vegas could exploit. They did exploit it, and see ya. Yeah. And the same is going to be true this year. You know, what do you say? What if down the road you're going to look at a Dallas Stars team that's going to end up having to play Vancouver or Colorado, teams that have, at least in the regular season, shown that they can exploit some things that Dallas does?
And I think, to me, the beauty of this trade is we've talked about before options, right? There are, we just mentioned a couple, right? Now, before this deal, right, Dallas's approach was either you split up Harley and Haskinen and you water down two pairings and you hope that the third pairing doesn't get you killed, or you put the super pairing out there and you hope that they are so very good that the fact that you have kind of two limited pairings doesn't get you killed, right? There were problems.
Right. Or and then you roll Haskinen for 29 minutes a night, and by the time you make it to the third series, he's dead.
Right, exactly. Whereas now, there's a world in which you can use this trade to shift Haskinen to his strong side and give him a partner in Tanev and make that a kind of balanced, true number one pairing. There's a world in which you pair Tanev with Esa Lindell and you keep Harley and Haskinen together as your kind of dynamo first unit, and then have a shutdown pair that can actually shut things down again, right? That can suddenly, because the thing that's been killing the Lindell pairing, and part of this is because it's not his skill set, but it's their breakouts have been a major issue this season. Once you bottle them up, they have a lot of trouble progressing the puck. And if you're a nerd, go look at the fancy stats. One of the things that Chris Tanev is very, very good at is making that outlet pass. And so in theory, right, giving Esa Lindell, a guy that can move the puck a little bit, might get Esa back to the point where he was sort of a premier defensive defender.
And then if you can do that and have the Haskin and Harley pairing and then be able to kind of rotate, you know, Hakanpaa and Suter or whoever else on that third unit, now you're really cooking, right? Or you can put him with Harley. Like, now you can suddenly have, you have, in my opinion, you have four pieces that can function in the top four of an NHL lineup, which is just transformative. We've seen it happen with the forward. How much good did it do adding Matt Duchene? And now all of a sudden you have pieces you can spread between three different forward lines, right?
Great move by Jim Neal, and it's, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. You know, cross your fingers. Game two in San Jose, we finally get to see Chris Tanev in action.
It'd be nice. It would be nice. Anything else? Is the only other thing I wanted to make on this point is obviously the downside of this, right? There's the people aspect, and there's now one fewer spot on the Dallas blue line. And it sure, if we look at, you know, the other piece of this is Lundqvist and Hakanpaa both made their returns after this deal was announced. And if we look at the fact that he's still playing below 15 minutes, the writing seems like it's pretty clear that Nils Lundqvist is the guy that's gonna get turfed on account of this move. Am I crazy?
I think you're somewhat crazy. I think we'll let it work out in the regular season, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs. The playoffs are all about matchups. If we need some size in the playoffs, we're going to roll Hakanpaa. I don't think that Lundqvist has played himself to a position where he's definitely going to be the seventh defender come playoff time. I think there are some things that he brings to the table that Hakanpaa doesn't bring to the table. You know, if you take a look at the fancy stats, and it's the number of minutes is pretty significant at this point, that Suter-Lundqvist pair has been really good.
I mean, so, I would like for that to be the case, truthfully. I just have but my natural skepticism, right? It's the classic, like, teams always favor the big old dude because you look at his mistakes and say, he's got experience, whereas the young dude, it's always size erratic. I don't know. I hope that you're right, because I agree. I think the best version of this team probably has, you know, that Suter Lundqvist third pairing, and that gives you more, again, options over the course of the lineup. I have concerns that there's so much baggage with Lundy and this organization, and there's just such an old, there's such a fixation. And I was about to say old hockey, I don't even think it's old, but there is just, you look at Hakanpaa's profile and nobody else on the team looks like that. And you feel like you kind of have to have him in the lineup because of that.
On the other hand, you just traded the only other prospect that you have in the entire system where size is that big of a deal. So which way is the organization going?
Yeah. I mean, you got Liam Bichelle, right? He's still around.
Yeah, but he also moves the puck.
Yeah.
You know, and here, I'm not saying you know, on the back end, you aren't necessarily drafting small guys. Take a look at Thomas Harley. Thomas Harley's a puck mover, but he's 6'3".
Yep.
Look at Jason Robertson. He's 6'3". It's not that you turn away size. You just want to pair. You know, the ideal situation is when you pair the size with the skill.
Yeah. But I mean, that's
it's almost like the Stars
of size by itself is not useful.
Yeah. Well, and the Stars went through that, you know, in the Riley Tufte days. It's like, yeah, we're going to just draft a bunch of really big guys because we need to beat St. Louis. Well, nope. We don't need to do that anymore.
No.
But
if those big guys can't play, you're not going to beat St. Louis either. So
you need better big guys than St. Louis has.
You just need better player. Yeah, that they lost that series because the power play is my, I will die on that hill. They lost a single game because they finally ran Lehtinen out of road, but they lost that series because the power play couldn't come through when it needed to.
Well, I have a question for you that kind of goes along this way. Where did the Wyatt Johnston draft pick come from?
Oh, I should. I know this. Oh my gosh,
I mean, it came from Detroit, but it wasn't Detroit's original draft pick.
I don't remember, and I feel like you're setting me up for something very interesting.
No, I'm not. I'm not. It's a Detroit got it at the trade deadline when they traded Anthony Mantha to the Washington Capitals.
Really?
And you know what? Did Washington win the cup that year? They were upgrading.
Yeah.
But, you know, it cost him a Wyatt Johnston to upgrade and not win the cup.
I mean, it cost the Stars Jerome Iginla to win a cup once upon a time, right?
Yeah. And as I say, it's a crapshoot, but you better fix a need, because I'm not sure that Washington, you know, Mantha's a great player. He's a great player against the Stars, that's for sure. But is bringing in a little bit more offense to Washington a couple years ago something that's going to put him over the top? I don't think so. And so why are you giving up a first round draft choice to do that? And I think that's where Jim Nill isn't playing hockey 101. He's playing hockey 401.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just Jim Nill, right? I think you're absolutely right.
Anyway, that's kind of my thought of the whole thing. My only hot take that I have, and I know you were going to ask me, so I might as well just slide it in here.
I was about to ask you literally this. It was the next thing I was going to say.
Well, I'll lead with a question, and it's a question I don't know the answer to, so hopefully you do. When was the last time the Dallas Stars had 14 roster forwards?
Oh, that I don't remember.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has, because of course this calls back to, well, golly, Mark, why are they being so diligent about keeping Stankoven off the roster as much as they can to accrue cap space as they approach the deadline? What possibly could this team be trying to do?
Here's my hot take.
A different player that's not currently on the team, but you went a different way than I did.
Here's my hot take. Once Tanev settles in, team waves Joel Hanley. They bring up Maverick Bork.
Into my veins. Yeah.
Texas is a hot mess right now. Might as well utilize him with the big club, see what you got.
Well, and the other piece of that is, right, like you had this dynamite pair in the AHL dominating the league, scoring a ton of goals, driving a lot of offense, doing all of the things, right? You call one of those guys up and, oh, look, it translates. No growing pains whatsoever. So all of a sudden you have a lot of evidence that speaks to the fact that if Logan Stankoven is ready, then Maverick Bork is probably ready as well. And I think to your point, right, with Chris Tanev in the lineup, your final roster spot, if your final roster spot is flexing between Yanni Hakanpaa and Nils Lundqvist, that is in a different real estate than Joel Hanley. And I think you do get to the point where having a player like Maverick Bork that you can pull into the lineup, especially Sagan's hurt, right? He's week to week right now. Dadonoff is on LTIR. The goals have been a little bit harder to come by lately. I think that a guy like Maverick Bork, you see how, you know, if you're seeing how quickly Logan Stankoven took to the NHL, and you're looking at his running mate down in the AHL and thinking, hey, I'd like, why not twice, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you take a look at what's going on in Texas. Last I checked, and I haven't checked the final today, but last time I checked, the last four goals Texas scored were scored by guys who started their season in the ECHL. They're running three of their six defenders were ECHL defenders earlier. Texas is going to make the playoffs just because they got to a hot start, but they aren't going anywhere. And Maverick Bork's not learning anything by slogging through what's left of the Texas Stars season. Do what you did with Thomas Harley last year. Give him a taste and see what happens.
Worst case, right? He's a black ace that gets called up after rosters expand and the cap goes away. Like, there's no way that he doesn't appear with the Dallas Stars. I think you are so correct on this, Mark, that, because I mean, at this point with the Texas Stars, like one of the hopeful thoughts is, well, if Leon Bichel's team doesn't finish high enough and gets eliminated from the playoffs early, he might be back in Texas by like April. And when you're at that stage of the logic train trying to argue for a good season, yeah, you're right. I think he did benefit from being, you know, in a score, from doing what he did over the course of most of a season in the AHL. I think developmentally that was probably the right decision. But yeah, there are no more worlds to conquer. And I think if this team isn't thinking about ways to get Maverick Bork onto the roster, then they're crazy. And we know they're not crazy.
Yeah. So what do you have in the Easy Bake Oven?
Oh man, mine was a little bit different, and you kind of you're talking me off of the ledge with this Bork thing, but my easy take oven is, I don't think that they're done defensively, and it would not stun me if they went out and got a you know, Scott Walker, or were in on Noah Hanifin. Like, it wouldn't surprise me with as much salary as they got retained on Tanev, right? Getting him at 1.1, that has a transformative effect on what you can do at the deadline. Like with $2 million in practical cap space, you can get pretty much anybody that you want. So my hot take is that looking at this team, they want one more defensive piece.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly if Neil sees a deal that's not going to leverage or mortgage his future, I think you're right. The question is that deal out there now that Dallas kind of got things rolling and other people are going to up their efforts in order to bring in what they need?
I mean, the market now has, I mean, although I would have said that the price would have been high because we've already talked about one time when Jim Mill kind of bamboozled expectations, but yeah, you're right. That's the one thing he's got to play against right now is that, you know, on
the supply went down one and a big one. So now the remaining resources are going to be more vital teams that really need to fix the defense.
Yeah. My take was that this is a team that I don't think if they could wave a wand, I think they would want one more defenseman.
Well, Jim Neal always says you can never have too much defense.
No, and he by not having enough over the course of this season, he proved that, right? Philosophy successfully tested, right? Well, that's really the news, right? There's some up and down in the standings. Honestly, Mark, though, the situation remains pretty unchanged from where we were the last time we spoke. Dallas, Winnipeg, and Colorado are still jockeying back and forth. Dallas has the technical lead. Winnipeg has the points per game lead. They've been scorching lately, 8-2-0. They've got games in hand. Dallas and Colorado have both tailed off. So at this exact second, you probably would say that, you know, in terms of who's going to walk away with the Central Division, it's, you know, you would probably rather be Winnipeg based on what the standings say. But then again, Dallas just smoked him and Dallas just got some pretty critical help. So I think if you're the Stars, you're still looking at the division as imminently winnable. Like I said, I don't think in the week and a couple of days it's been since we last podcast, I don't think that things have meaningfully changed in terms of what the standings say. So they're still in a dogfight down the stretch.
Yeah. And it's coming down the home stretch. And the one thing the Stars have going in their favor is, if I remember right, by a significant margin, they have the easiest schedule of the playoff teams remaining here. So,
they do.
So, you know, which makes you feel really, really good until you take a look at how they played against San Jose the other day.
Yeah, but they got the two.
Yep,
it's fine. And you know, it's this. We've reached a point where this team will get goalied, and now they either win or they at least get to overtime. We've kind of graduated past watching this team get goalied and not get anything to show for it, which is for the most part, which is a nice progress. But yeah, they've still got some stuff to work on. I think, you know, the forwards need to sort themselves out a little bit. It has been remarkable, the drop off. Like, I think not in a bad way. It shouldn't take anything away from the season he's having. I do think that the last week and a half or so with Tyler Seguin out of the lineup, I hope will change the narrative a little bit from Matt Duchene has single-handedly made that line relevant to more of a nuanced, you know, those two players plus Marchment. Like, I think we've seen that it isn't as simple as saying, well, Matt Duchene is the reason that line works. Like, I think we've seen a pretty clear example of, like, no, there's some stuff Tyler Seguin's bringing to the table that really helped that trio hum. So it's been not great having him out, and hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later.
Here's my mic drop. Tyler Seguin gets replaced by Maverick Bourque. Done.
I mean, if he's going to be out for a while, right? Week to week is different than day to day. And it's one of those where it's not like a specific thing. It's wear and tear. So I think there is a lot, capital L, there is a lot to argue if you're the Dallas Stars, given his importance to the team, given his history with injuries, given his age, given a lot of things. Like, if you can plug that hole and get to the playoffs without having to lean on, you know, if you can get Tyler Seguin some time to heal, right? Like, this team is so much better if somebody else works in that slot too. Then all of a sudden you've got options on the bin line. Oh my gosh, you're talking me into it. That's a good moment to leave on. Oof. Okay, so we've had our mic drop and our hot take. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we wrap this one up, Mark?
I can't drop the mic if you make me talking, can you?
You'll fix it in post.
Well, we have to go is make some wagers, right?
Make some wages. Yeah, this has been Stargazing, brought to you by our friends at Bet Online. Podcast over. Oh, wait. Thanks, KT. I got to do the thank yous. Dang it. I am the worst. Thank you, Mark, for your insights. KT, for doing all the hard work behind the scenes. Again, this has been Stargazing, brought to you by Bet Online. Really for real. Podcast over.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.